Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. The ticker tape parade for the NBA champion New York Knicks was a special event for the city.
The energy today and all around New York is off the charts. And I want to thank you all for it. Let's keep this energy going, baby, because this championship is about you guys. This is New York City's championship.
And I'll chat with legendary festival producer Danny Melnick as the 49th Saratoga Jazz Festival gets ready for another 2 days of wonderful music next weekend.
I just feel very strongly that, you know, as a producer of these festivals, it's a responsibility that I don't take lightly. And I try to find as much parity as I possibly can. But within the 22 sets that we have, you know, I always try to juggle everything and try to come up with the best, most interesting lineup I can.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Many Knicks fans are saying the team's first NBA championship in 53 years has unified the city in many different ways. And that was on display during Thursday's huge ticker tape parade along the Canyon of Heroes. Knicks coach Mike Brown addressed the crowd at the City Hall ceremony.
First of all, I'd like to thank the governor and the mayor for doing this for us. I'm proud of Mr. Dolan, Leon and his staff, all the players, all the coaches, Jamal, the front office side, all the Knick alumni that I see out there. We appreciate you guys. Pat Ewing, I got to give you a shout out. You've been with us this whole journey. I want to thank everybody. I'm proud of everybody for helping accomplish this great feat. The energy today and all around New York is off the charts. And I want to thank you all for it. Let's keep this energy going, baby, because this championship is about you guys. This is New York City's championship.
Finals MVP Jalen Brunson, who scored 45 points in the clinching Game 5 against the San Antonio Spurs, was next to take the microphone at City Hall.
First and foremost, I want to say thank you to Jim Dolan in the front office for believing in the kid no one else would. Thank you to my teammates giving me confidence every single day. The belief we had in each other made this possible. Thank you our coaching staff, our medical staff, everyone that pitched in every single day behind the scenes. We really did it, dog. Somehow, some way, I knew we were going to find a way to get this done. Most importantly, thank you to the fans. I'm not going to lie, though, y'all are some pretty hard critics. But we appreciate it. At least I do. Appreciate it a lot. Lastly, I want to thank my family. Truly, without them, their sacrifice and everything wouldn't be possible. My inner circle, I mean, they keep me humble every single day. They don't let me get off track for nothing. Damn, New York, we really did it, man. We really did it.
Moments later, Mayor Zoran Mondani presented the keys to the city to the Knicks players, coaches, and staff.
My fellow New Yorkers, for 53 long years, we have watched and we have waited. We have watched from nosebleeds and through gritted teeth, on televisions in the windows of electronic stores, and from projectors balanced on fire escapes. We have watched alone in our apartments with our heads in our hands, shoulder to shoulder at bars where the signal flickers, alongside friends and family who we wish more than anything could be here today, sharing this moment. For 53 long years, we have watched the Knicks and we have waited. We waited as the memory of Willis Reed winning the championship on one leg grew fainter and fainter. We waited as Clyde came up clutch again and again. As John Starks dunked on Jordan and Patrick Ewing dunked on the Pacers. as Bernard King scored 60.
Yeah, Brooklyn!
As Charles Oakley pulled every rebound within reach. As Spike got in Reggie Miller's face. As Allen Houston put up a shot against Miami that hung in the air for an eternity. As Larry Johnson gave us the four-point play heard around New York. As Starbury traded threes with Kobe and then sold sneakers every kid could afford. As Nate Robinson stuffed Yao Ming. As the city came alive watching Linsanity. And as Melo lived every Brooklyn dreams when he came home and made MSG feel like the center of the universe once again. We waited without ever knowing if this day would come, and we waited because we knew deep down in our sick, suffering hearts that it would. New York City, this team has done it. The New York Knicks are NBA champions.
The NYPD estimates 2 million people attended the ticker tape parade. The 49th Saratoga Jazz Festival runs Saturday, June 27th and Sunday, June 28th. It's 2 days, 2 stages, and 22 electrifying artists from the jazz world to roots, funk, blues, soul, rock, indie, and beyond. The Saratoga Performing Arts Center in the historic resort town of Saratoga Springs in upstate New York is the venue for the Saratoga Jazz Festival. And back to talk about this year's event is producer extraordinaire Danny Melnick. Great to see you again, Danny.
You too, Doug. Thanks so much.
So you started helping out with this festival in 1999 with George Wein. And then eventually you partnered up and started really doing everything in 2007. Can you believe that it's the 49th Saratoga Jazz Festival?
It's extraordinary. I mean, George, you know, started this event with the people at SPAC in 1978. The premise at the time was that he had the Newport Jazz Festival in New York City starting in 1972. And through the terrible New York City summer of 77, he thought that maybe it was over in New York City. And he went up to Saratoga at the end of that summer and made a deal to do the 78 festival, the first festival. But on his way back to New York, he had to pay a toll at the GW Bridge. And in his autobiography, he talks about how that, for some reason, said to him, well, New York must have value because I left here for free, but I have to pay to come back. So I'm going to do the Newport Jazz Festival in New York City again in 78. I'm going to keep going and I'm going to add Saratoga. And he did. And all these years later, this festival now in its 49th edition has been thriving up there. I've had the great fortune of been working up there for decades and booking the artists and producing the festival, first under his auspices and then as a partner with SPAC. And it's an incredible thing. You know, he kind of went up there on a lark and he made it happen, and the folks at SPAC made it happen. And after all these years, here we are, you know, coming back to the 49th Festival, and it's just such a joy and a fabulous experience, and I'm very proud to keep this legacy alive.
I imagine when the actual dates, you know, approach, you start to remember more and more about your association with George Wein. So I know that that happens. What do you think was the biggest lesson you learned from that creator of the Newport Jazz Festival and SPACs?
George was an incredible lover of the music. He respected the artist greatly. He always wanted to make sure that the artists were taken care of as best as possible, you know, with the best, you know, presentation, and really, you know, making sure that we understood as producers that we had a responsibility towards that. But he also very clearly taught me and all of the others that had worked for him for all of these years that the business side of it, managing the finances properly, dealing with sponsors professionally, giving the audience the best possible experience and show that we could, and handling it like a true, clear, very, you know, realistic and business, and not just as a hobby, and not something that is just, oh, this is the arts and it's not something that needs to be, you know, dealt with that way. He really showed all of us how to balance those two things and to make sure that we knew what we were doing and how we were handling the business side. Because without that, there are no festivals. The festivals would all go away. You know, they lose hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, and they would go away. And so we have this idea, this sense as a community, even with the fans, I think, that these things are evergreen and that they're always going to be there. And, you know, these are like part of the zeitgeist and part of the lexicon of our language. But the truth is that every festival around the world is, you know, challenging themselves to manage their finances properly and do the best they can for the audiences and for the artists. And I think the jazz festival people have done an incredible job throughout the world, because so many of these festivals have been running for a long time. And I think that's a testament to George, who started it all, and to all of us who, you know, have learned from him near and afar.
With your lineup this year, as always is the case, you have veterans and legends, and you have upcoming rising stars. Let's start with one of your headliners, Patti LaBelle.
Yeah, Patti is one of the grand dames of American music. This, I believe, is her fourth appearance on the festival. It's been a long time since she's been with us. But I was thrilled to get her again. You know, I've been wanting to bring her back for the last couple of years, and coming out of the pandemic, her touring slowly started to come back. She's been doing this huge arena tour on and off for the last couple of years with Gladys Knight and with Chaka Khan and Stephanie Mills. And so, you know, we got really lucky with Patti. She just headlined the Blue Note Jazz Festival at the Hollywood Bowl last weekend. And so we're thrilled to have Patti back on Saturday with us.
Some great performers and female performers in this lineup. You mentioned Patti LaBelle, but somebody you've worked with in the past is Diane Reeves. I know that she is one of your favorites.
She is one of my favorites. I mean, Diane Reeves has a voice like no other, a command of her instrument like no other. NEA Jazz Master, a multi-Grammy award-winning artist. She's played the festival a lot over the years. And she's going to be with us on Sunday, the 28th. And yeah, I mean, just, you know, she wows the audience every time she gets on that stage, no matter what she sings, no matter what she does, no matter who's in her band. It's really, you know, for me as a listener, you know, it's an astonishing experience always to be there listening to Diane Reeves. I mean, she's a gold medal, you know.
There were four generations of love on her face. She was so wise, no surprise past her eyes. She had seen it all. I was a child, or about three or four, all day.
Whether it's Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, whether it's Terry Lynn Carrington, Lakeisha Benjamin, women are dominating the stage when it comes to these festivals at times, aren't they?
They are. And I've made a very, very conscious effort, you know, throughout my career, but particularly in the last 10 years or so, to make a strong showing for the women, to book them, to showcase them as headliners, as band leaders. This year, we also have Sasha Dobson and Alexa Tarantino, and a number of others. And I just feel very strongly that, you know, as a producer of these festivals, it's a responsibility that I don't take lightly. And I try to find as much parity as I possibly can within the structure of the event that we have. I mean, if I had 50 sets, I would book plenty more women and obviously, you know, even push the boundaries of the festival even more deeply. But within the 22 sets that we have, you know, I always try to juggle everything and try to come up with the best, you know, most interesting lineup I can.
You have one of the best blues guitarists in the world in Kingfish Ingram.
I put a spell on you. stop the things you do. Stop the things you do. Ain't lying. I can't stand you running around. Oh, I can't stand. You say you're gonna put me down. I put a spell on you because you're mine. Because you're mine.
But this festival also, it's the 100th birthdays of Miles Davis and John Coltrane, and I know you have things planned for that.
Yeah, we do. So on Saturday, we're doing the Miles Electric Band, which is mostly made up of musicians who played with Miles during his career. It's the only official project going out this year that is endorsed and managed by the Miles Davis estate. Vince Wilburn, Miles's nephew and the drummer of the band, you know, put this ensemble together. And I learned through my research over the last couple of months that Miles Davis and Patti LaBelle both made their Saratoga debuts on the same Saturday night in 1985. And it just so happens that I'm doing this Miles Electric Band project on the same day as Patti's performance, Saturday, June 27th. And the Miles Electric Band is going to be second to last on the amphitheater stage. So they're going to go on right before Patti. So I'm very excited about that and happy how that all came together. And then on Sunday, we always open the festival on the Discovery Stage with the Skidmore Jazz Faculty All-Star Band. The band is led by the bassist Todd Kuhlman. It is the first day of their summer jazz camp at Skidmore. So all of the kids come to Saratoga on Saturday. They do some sort of orientation dinner and hang on Saturday night at the college. And then on Sunday, we present the faculty all-star band and all the kids who are going to be on that camp program for the next 2 weeks come to the jazz festival as their first full day as part of the camp, which is really cool. So we love to have the students there. And the band this year is going to do a Coltrane Centennial set, which I'm thrilled that they're going to do. And every year, Todd and I come up with a different theme, whether it's a centennial theme or an album theme or a heroes theme or whatever the case is. And it was obvious to me, you know, while I was putting this together, that I wanted them to do the Coltrane program. And so Todd said, absolutely, yes. And so they're doing that. And that's going to open the program on Sunday.
What a great way, even though they are already interested in jazz because they're a part of those performances, but a great way to introduce them to not only festivals, but, you know, the different artists who some might never have, you know, come in contact with before. This has to be something that's really something that they'll never forget.
Never forget. And, you know, over the years, that program, I mean, has a lot of very bold-faced name, you know, artists who have gone through, you know, the Skidmore program, particularly John Batiste. And that's a big part of his origin story. I mean, obviously coming out of New Orleans, but when he was like 14 years old or something, he came up to New York and went to the Skidmore Jazz Institute for a few weeks that summer. And so, yes, it's a fabulous opportunity for these kids to not only be at the festival and hear all of these fabulous artists, but to, you know, kind of hang out together socially too. And they're all wearing their camp t-shirts so they can be identified. And they get to see their new teachers who they just met the night before play a set at the festival, which is very cool. So, and Todd uses it as part of the educational experience with the kids. You know, as they move on with the program over those next few weeks, he does reference their set. He asked them questions about different segments of the set, you know, when somebody comped or soloed or, you know, whatever the case was. So it's a very interesting part of the program that they have. And I'm so happy that their program lines up with the festival every year because it's, you know, just a really nice thing to do for us. We give them festival t-shirts and stuff like that too. And, you know, so it's yeah, I think it's a really cool, you know, unique thing that Skidmore is able to offer to kids all over the world, but particularly all over the country to come to New York and you know, be part of the festival.
We've talked about this in the past, but having two stages, that's basically given you more opportunities to bring acts in, and it's really helped with the whole production, right?
Totally. You know, it's such an important part of the festival because the amphitheater is huge. And, you know, yes, we can put big name artists up there and you know, really strong up and coming artists that we expect to draw a crowd into the amphitheater. But for me, as the person who has booked the artist since 1999 and you know, has been producing it all these years, it's really the great joy of the festival because I love giving up and coming emerging artists an opportunity to be heard in a larger audience. I love being able to book certain styles of music, certain artists that might not necessarily be super comfortable on this massive amphitheater stage, a more intimate, you know, setting where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people gather around the stage and really create like this theater style, you know, type of environment. So, for example, this year, for the first time ever, Bill Frisell, legendary guitarist, is playing this festival. And I have his band playing on the Discovery stage because, as you know, his music is really beautiful and subtle, very nuanced. And I wanted him to have a really focused, very crowded, you know, energetic experience with the audience. And I felt that putting him on that stage was going to be much more appropriate for the music that he plays rather than putting him on this massive, you know, huge 5,000 seat amphitheater. So Bill's doing that, and we mix it up with some blues and some soul music and some great straight ahead jazz and some more adventurous jazz, some New Orleans stuff. So I always try really hard to, you know, mix it up as much as I can on that stage. And really, what we found over the years is that those artists are some of the most exciting moments for the audience. And when the artists are selling vinyl and CDs still, they are still selling CDs. Those artists on the Discovery stage typically sell the most product to the audience because the audience is learning about these artists and want to get their music and maybe get autographs and photos and stuff like that. So it's a really amazing thing to witness that, you know, those types of artists can really have such an impact, you know, to the audience. And I think even though you wouldn't necessarily rely on them to sell tickets, I think the audience is buying tickets because they know that that is such a exciting and fun and cool part of the festival, and they want to hear those artists, you know. So it's a really great asset for us.
Tradition is also a great asset because of you, so people will know that they're going to get quality entertainment. For those who have never attended the Saratoga Jazz Festival, okay, you either step off a bus or you get there via vehicle. What happens next, Danny?
Well, the cool thing about SPAC is that it's in New York State park property. So there's thousands and thousands of acres of park property surrounding the venue. The venue is a spectacularly gorgeous place. It's celebrating its 60th summer. It's the summer home of the Philadelphia Orchestra and the New York City Ballet and many rock and pop concerts and so many other things that they do there. They can park for free. They come into the gates, and we have this 5,000 seat amphitheater and this huge, beautiful lawn with these towering pine trees. We have a very robust food and beverage situation, lots of options for people. We have a huge crafts area. This year, we have more than 50 craft vendors. We have a second stage, like we've just talked about, that highlights a lot of emerging and also, you know, legendary artists. It's a very loose vibe. If people buy a reserve seat in the amphitheater, they can still set up beach chairs and umbrellas and what have you on the lawn and go back and forth. Some people just buy lawn tickets and don't come down into the amphitheater. But if they're sitting out on the lawn, they have these huge, massive, very high-tech LED, you know, video screens with a great audio system. So you can see all of the great artists that are playing in the amphitheater from the lawn and then move around and go get food and drink and, you know, check out the crafts and what have you. So it's a real vibe. It's a very family-friendly type of festival. It's a very eclectic and diverse audience. People have been coming to that festival for decades. People have gotten married there. They've had kids and grandchildren that they have now brought, you know, to the festival. And a lot of those children now are bringing their children to the festival. So it's a really welcoming, really beautiful place. It's I think SPAC as a venue is really one of the nicest amphitheater, you know, venues in America, along with Wolf Trap in Virginia and Ravinia in Chicago. And it's just a beautiful place to be. And when the weather's nice up there, it's just a spectacular 2 days. So obviously, you know, we're hoping for that. But even in the rain, people have a good time. So, but I'm hoping for good weather.
Yes, absolutely. And you like more information about tickets, you can go to two places, wbgo.org and spac.org, and you can get more information. So last question for you. I know I don't want you to single anybody out, but I'm kind of going to ask you this. I want to know on your which night, what artist, and what food are you going to enjoy at the Saratoga Jazz Festival the most?
Well, I try to hear as much music as I can. It's very hard for me, and sometimes it upsets me that, you know, I'll miss most of a set or something, but I can only be in one place at one time, and, you know, there's a lot going on. I really love the barbecue up there. I'm a big ribs guy. I try to, you know, behave, but I do really love the barbecue up there. And I always find a way to get an ice cream or something like that. And for the music, you know, we have Cecile McLaurin-Salvant coming back on Saturday. She's, you know, an epic, phenomenal vocalist. I'm very excited to be presenting Anna Popovich, this great blues guitarist and singer on Saturday. And on Sunday, closing both stages, I have this sort of roots rock thing that I put together purposely. You mentioned Kingfish Ingram before. He's going to be in the amphitheater a little earlier in the day. But closing the Discovery stage on Sunday, we have this guy, Eddie Ninevolt, who is incredible. Soul rock, blues guitar player and singer. He is just tearing it up right now in America, playing all over the place. He's doing a gig at the Wonder Bar in Asbury Park soon, and he's playing the Brooklyn Bowl and all these big festivals and stuff, and opening up for the Black Keys. And then I have this incredible soul funk roots rock band from New Orleans closing the festival, named the Revivalists. And they've had a whole bunch of hit songs over the last few years. They're selling a lot of tickets nationally. And it's really going to be sort of one of these like New Orleans, you know, parties at the end of the festival on Sunday. And we're very excited about all of that. And then we're, quite frankly, already planning for the 50th next year. So I've made a bunch of offers to artists already for next year. And it's crazy that we're like doing this one now and already planning the 50th next year.
A legend, booking legends and upcoming, hopefully legends, as part of the 49th yes. Saratoga Jazz Festival. Once again, Saturday, June 27th, Sunday, June 28th at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center in the historic resort town of Saratoga Springs in upstate New York. Go to wbgo.org or spac.org for ticket information. The great Danny Melnick, thanks for joining us today and continued success.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Said I'm pulling down the shades for the long ride. Never knew that I could feel so black and blue. And I've been holding on to something now for some time. And all I know is it's a feeling fit for two. Cause when the sunlight laid its head down on this dark night, and I was talking to myself in the rear view. Yeah, I've got questions, but I know everything is alright. And all I have to do is just remember you.
Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle, proud to announce that WBGO News has won 4 national awards from the Public Media Journalists Association, including being honored for this program, the WBGO Journal. We could not do it without your support. If you've yet to make a pledge to WBGO, please do so now. You can do it online from anywhere in the world at wbgo.org. And thanks. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.